Welcome, guys, to episode 176 of Behind the Shield podcast. My name is James Gearing, and this week I am delighted to bring to you Diamond Dallas Page. Now, obviously, you will recognize him as the wrestler, but for many people, they would have seen a video the last few years with Arthur Borman, who was a paratrooper who'd hurt his back, put on a lot of weight, was on crutches, and found DDPY, Diamond Dallas Page's yoga system. Worked through it, ended up reversing his back pain, being able to run, lost all the extra body weight, just a complete transformation that I think had most people in tears, to be honest. So I wanted to reach out to Diamond Dallas and actually ask about this and learn about his system and the challenge that he's just put out, and the books that he just released. So we discuss all these areas. Now, just as a preface, a lot of times I'm able to get someone in a studio, you know, on Skype or face-to-face. This one was through Skype on a telephone, so the quality isn't as good as some of the episodes. Just understand that's the reason. There's nothing wrong with what you're listening through. It's just this particular conversation was done through a cell phone. So that being said, like I always say, go to your podcast apps. Please share the show, rate the show. Most importantly, subscribe and then use social media and help this project grow. Every week we're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that means that more and more people are learning from all these incredible guests that we have. And that is my ultimate goal. So with that being said, I introduce to you Diamond Dallas Page. Enjoy. I want to say thank you so much for coming on to the Behind the Shield podcast. I have followed you ever since watching Arthur's video, which we'll get into in a little bit. Heard your interview on Joe Rogan that was fantastic as well, and then watched the resurrection of Jake the Snake. So I obviously, like most people, thought that you were, you know, a wrestler, and that was kind of the the center of the universe. But then, obviously, learned about your yoga and everything else, and I'm very excited to explore that world that you found yourself now. So, where are we finding you today?
Actually, I just left the DDP Yoga Performance Center, and I've been doing so many promos because of our new book that dropped. Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It. Where are you located at? Where are you doing your podcast from?
I'm in Ocala, Florida, so a couple states south of you.
Okay. Went national. We took it off with this DDP yoga style that we do shit, which is we put together a really great promotion and challenge around the book. And so the book's called Positively Unstoppable, and the contest or the challenge is the Positively Unstoppable Challenge, which we're going to take people all over North America, from Canada and the United States, whoever gets involved in our challenge. If they go to it's positivelyunstoppable.com, they can sign up, and we're going to pick two finalists whoever has the best physical transformation and mental transformation. We're going to bring them to Atlanta, GA, put them up at the Accountability Crib, and give them a chance to win $1 million.
Brilliant. All right. Well, you said the Accountability Crib. So explain what that is. Obviously, I've been exposed to it through the documentaries. But what is the Accountability Crib? And why did you even start one in the first place?
Well, you know, it was my home. I just literally moved in. I moved from L.A. I was there for 10 years. And I was never really a fan of L.A. Too many plastic people, and It just didn't work for me. And I lived in Atlanta for 13 years where I was wrestling. And I loved it, loved the people. My daughters were here, and some of my good buddies were here. So I moved back a little over 7 years ago. And when I moved in, I brought Jake Roberts with me. He came from Texas, and Jake the Snake was, as low as he could be at that moment. And, helped him literally kick out and turn his life around along the way. So Razor Ramon, a.k.a. Scott Hall, you know, he came and, you know, moved in as well. And about 2 months in, I had reached out to, you know, a lot of the people who do my program. And right now I'm in the process of branding DDP Yoga DDPY. Why? Because I want to get people to understand it's not just yoga, so I don't want people to call it just yoga. It's not. I never developed it for yogis. I developed it for people who wouldn't be called deadbeat in yoga, like Diamond Dallas Page, Jake Snake Roberts, Razor Ramon, you know, just to name a few. When I was reaching out to all the people who do my program, I said, you know, Jake's moving in with me, and we're going to track it, and we're going to see, you want to make him, you know, we're going to see how well he does. And I said, I'm looking for a name for my house. And a girl named Christina Ann, who's a friend of mine, been involved in a program for, God, about 8 years, she gave me a list of names. And one of them was the Accountability Crib. And I thought that's exactly what this place is. Because, you know, you can't do anything without being accountable. You're going to make the wrong move, though. You got to, you know, own up to it and own it, you know. So that's how it got named. Today, the Accountability Crib is an Airbnb, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, since then, I've actually moved out and got another home, but I own this home. So I thought, well, I could rent it out, or I could, you know, transfer the rooms into, like, the Razor Ramon suite, the DDP suite, and the Jake's, the Snake suite, and let people come in and you know, like, move in for a night, a week, a month. And, like, our DDP Yoga Performance Center is literally, you know, like, 3/4 of a mile from where the actual, where the crib is. So, bottom line is, you know, it all works. It's kind of like one thing feeds another. And now the Accountability Crib is, people are coming in, they're staying for a night, or they might come in for a week and, you know, try to dial in on, you know, setting goals and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, what I found really, I connected with the documentary and your story and, you know, the people that have kind of come across your radar, as it were, was the profession that I'm in, firefighting and police officers and members of the military. If you're a male specifically, you know, that's an alpha male. That's a, you know, a manly profession, if you like. And one of the observations I've made now as a 44-year-old man looking back is some of the issues that we're seeing, whether it's, you know, depression, anxiety, you know, God forbid, suicide, addiction. Some of those are interwoven with the fact that we were sold with like a false image of what a man is. And I think, you know, wrestling and the movies, you had the persona, you know, you had your characters and these muscular superheroes, many of which went and did action movies, you know, on stage were invincible. And what I found interesting, and you find exactly the same thing in our professions, is behind the scenes of that seemingly perfect, you know, man or woman are all these issues. And when you pull the curtains back, that, you know, that's where you see all these real human mental and physical challenges going on. So when did you first start seeing that amongst, you know, either yourself or your fellow wrestlers?
I don't know. I think I've always seen that. You know, I've never really bought into the facade of what, you know, even what people do for a living, you know, because, like you say, you know, the alpha dogs will pick up and do some of the more manly stuff because that's just in our genes. And then you decide how strong that's going to be by what you decide your mindset's going to be. But, you know, I've always seen that, you know, just as strong as those people can be, they can be just as equally weak. And, you know, I think everybody has their breaking points depending on what life happens to them. But I think we all come down to owning whatever, you know, whatever mask we decide to put on. Like, I developed and created Diamond Dallas Page. Is it a part of me and of who I really am? Absolutely. But, you know, I make myself accountable. I, you know, I go by the credence that no one's going to outwork me. You might work as hard as me, but you're not going to outwork me. So that's a, I don't know, a mental attitude. And so when it comes down to people breaking down and as you go along, I think that's all just a part of life.
Yeah. Now, what were some of the issues that you're seeing in some of your, you know, your fellow wrestlers as far as, you know, challenges that, that you ended up helping with?
I, you know, when we're young and invincible, we think that we're always going to be like that. Even though we look at people who've done it before us and see they're crippled up. But when you're young and you know, indestructible, you don't think that's ever going to be you. You see, when I got into professional wrestling at 35, starting at 35 was absolutely, you know, a real disadvantage because I was 35 and my body was a 35-year-old man. But there was also a lot of advantages that I wasn't going to be as stupid or crazy or as daring as I might have been at 23. So as guys have gotten older, I mean, I just got the full Buff Bagwell, and he has had his third hip replacement to the same hip. He's had shoulder replacements on his left shoulder twice, and his right rotator cuff, he just had a rotator cuff surgery. There was a time when I was 36 and he was 22. And he bumped like crazy, so would I, you know, in the ring. And he'd jump out, take a shower, get, you know, ready to go, and he'd hit the clubs. And I could be looking over him, and I'm icing my knees, and I'm icing my back. And I go, Buff, I go, don't, like, aren't you ever sore? Nope. Don't feel, I feel great. Like, he was indestructible. Right now, I'm still 14 years older than him. I'm 62. He's 47. He can't do any of the stuff that I can do. You know, so what I see is, as it moves along, is I watch my buddies break down. And even though they were great athletes in the day for what we did, they never had my work ethic. Like, if you knew all the things I did from the minute I wake up to the minute I go to sleep to hold back the hands of time, like, I'll be 63 in April. But I don't know, you know, Sylvester Stallone, Clint Eastwood, guys like that, you know, they could hang with me, you know, at that age. Both of those guys are much older, but when they were 63, they could hang with me. But are the rest of the 63 or 53-year-olds? Nah, ain't happening. And it's because I'm willing to put the work in. Like my new book, Positively Unstoppable, I talk about putting the work in all the way through it. And basically, I tell them in the first chapter, if you're not willing to put the work in, put the book down and put it to work, like leveling off your coffee table. You know, at least get it working somewhere for you. Now, the opening line to the book is, what would you do if you knew your success was a certainty? In other words, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? Like, anyway, most people can't imagine that. You know, they can't imagine not failing or, you know, especially something super complicated. If it's something that they do all the time, it's like, oh, I got this. You know, but try doing something that you've never done before and enter with the same confidence. Because, you know, we did a $1 million challenge. Like, these people who joined this contest, it's just costing us ridiculous money. But we've never done it before. So we figured it out as we go along. You know, we bring in the pros to help us actually run the contest because we don't know how to do that. So we bring in professionals to do that. And then we work our ass off getting the word out there and letting people know that if you go to positivelyunstoppable.com, boom, you can sign up. But there's no losers. Like, oh, you don't win $1 million. Oh, you don't become a finalist. There's no losers. You sort of get on a path to not just changing your life, but owning your life. And as the guys get older, they're way more apt to listen to what I have to say. The guys who are younger are the guys who got it. They're the guys who really will reap the reward. You know, like Chris Jericho. Chris, he blew his back out when he was 41. That was 7 years ago. I saw it. I reached out to him. I sent him Arthur's video, the disabled veteran. 5 minutes later, he called me. He said, you tell me what to do. I'll do whatever you say. Now, his career is over in wrestling. At least that's what they said. And his career in singing, like, he can't move around. He can't sing. He can't hit high notes. He's miserable. Like, both careers that he has become amazing in both freaking are over. After right around 3 months of working my DDPY program, he's not only back in the ring, he's headlining WrestleMania. That was 7 years ago. In January, 2 weeks ago, he headlined the Tokyo Dome in Japan in the main event, stole the show. He's 48, just signed a multi-million-dollar deal at 48 with AEW, the brand new wrestling organization that just started up. He's the top seed of all the guys they bring in. That's why he talks about my shit so much. That's a guy who gets owning it. I'm going to do his podcast Friday. I think it was Friday or Saturday. And we're going to film it, put it in the camper next week. I mean, it's so easy to talk to him about it all because he gets it. And he gave me credibility. He gave me credibility nobody could.
Well, then it's amazing. Like, there's another gentleman out there called Dr. Eric Goodman who started a movement practice called Foundation Training. It doesn't pretend to be yoga. It's literally, it's like a 10, 12 minute thing, but it reverses the damage from sitting. And just like yours, you know, I did it after I hurt my back, and, you know, I healed my back in 3 months, healed to the point where I was, you know, lifting solid weight again, functioning as an even better firefighter than I was before. And that's what is so mind-blowing, is there are practices like DDPY and foundation training and these other you know, movement practices or exercise modalities that work so well at reversing injury and lowering weight. And yet it's still such a hard sell to the average person that just wants to get drugs, even though we all know that most of the chronic medication prescriptions just don't work.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of people, because we're so programmed to go to see doctors and then doctors giving us medicine. And if you go back 50 years, that seemed like a miracle. You're like, oh, actually, medicine at work. But in the last 50 years, big pharma, my buddy Chris Bell did a documentary on it called Prescription Thugs. Like, the whole prescription, take the medicine, you know, and most doctors eat like shit. You know, so they know nothing about nutrition. Nothing. I found in my life, I found three of them who actually know anywhere near as much as I do about food. Three. And I'm not saying there's not more. There's more, but not a lot. Because it's all about take this prescription. And food can really heal you.
Absolutely. And like you said, the movement practice too. And that's what I think is another area where they've really dropped the ball in areas of medicine is, and you see this a lot in our professions, because you get hurt, you go see a workman's comp doc, you know, and you see a person who, again, is not well versed in sports injuries, who just gives you some painkillers and some anti-inflammatories and then sends you off to surgery a couple weeks later. And there's no understanding of the fact that true rehab, not rehab. You know, a lot of these facilities are great, but they're kind of getting geriatrics back to be able to walk into their house again and get in the bathtub. But there are movement practices out there that you can take a, you know, an injury that's obviously not completely detached, quadricep or something, but these strains and back injuries, and you can absolutely reverse it through yoga, through foundation training, through these movement practices that are out there that compared to these surgeries are, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, right. You know, Hulk Hogan has had 8 back operations I know about. Once you step into that back operations, that's what Chris didn't want to do. And I saved him from that. And once you start cutting on your back, boy, whew. You know, so again, finding something like my program, or I'm sure there's others out there. You know, I just know mine because that's what I do. And, you know, now I'm waiting for my letter from Bart Oates, who's the president of the NFL alumni. But I'm waiting to find, hopefully it's going to be released this week. It might be next week that we're going to be a signed partnership with the NFL alumni.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, that's a huge level of credibility. So I'm just waiting. You know, I've already got guys, you know, from the NFL doing it. And they're getting the results and feeling better. And that's what it's about.
Absolutely. Well, I guess the one question I need to ask so that you can kind of lead us down your own journey is, how did you first find, you know, yoga specifically? And then what was the reason and how did you engineer it to become your own personal DDPY?
Well, first of all, it was necessity, because I'm a guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga the first 42 years of my life. But I didn't start wrestling until I was 35. My career didn't take off until I was 40. That was in 1996. 97 and 98, I was on top of the world. When you're on top of the world like that, though, you're wrestling in the ring 270 to 300 days a year. You know, on top of your other schedule that gets programmed in. And, I would say 97 and 98, I was at 13 or 14, either main event pay-per-views or semi-main event. I just signed a multi-million-dollar 3-year deal, and then I blew my back out. I actually ruptured my L4 and L5. And, you know, people can say what they want about professional wrestling, but one thing rings true. You can't fake gravity, you know, and the beating that we take on our bodies is ridiculous. And I actually ruptured my L4 and L5. And I had 3 different spine specialists tell me I was never going to wrestle again. Well, I just signed a multi-million-dollar 3-year deal. There was no way that I was believing that it was over. So, enter yoga into my life, and man, I couldn't be any happier, because in the first, I'd say, 3 weeks, I started to feel a significant difference. And it was really helping, but it wasn't giving me everything. So, one night before I crashed out, I was doing my rehabilitation stuff, you know, because I've rehabbed both shoulder surgeries, both knee surgeries. So I know a little bit about rehab, but I know a lot. And it's almost instinctively about breaking up scar tissue. Now, breaking up scar tissue is what helps create flexibility and alleviate pain. So one night I start mixing the rehabilitation techniques with the yoga positions. Like, wow, that's kind of, that works. And I created a flow with that. And then I started adding an old school calisthenics, push-ups, squats, crunches. And I had to do them with a slow burn movement, you know, which means like a, you know, 3-second push-up or a 5-second push-up. I had to do it with slow so I didn't hurt anything. And then when I realized out of that whole slow burn push-ups and, you know, movement, that every time you flex or engage a muscle, your heart has to beat faster to get the blood to the muscle. So what it created, completely by accident, something I call dynamic resistance. And it was the beginning of what today is known as DDP yoga or DDPY. And what I ended up creating was a kick-ass cardiovascular workout that could dramatically increase my flexibility, strengthen my core at a whole nother level, all with minimal joint impact. In less than 3 months, I was back in the ring. At 42, they said my career is over. At 43, I was the heavyweight champ of the world. So something like that, I knew I not only was going to do the rest of my life, I knew it was something I was going to have to do the rest of my life. And just because of all of the wear and tear and impact on my body. And when you think about what, you know, actually created here, I didn't just do it, you know, in the big picture. For me, I did it for cops, firemen, and military. Beat up, broken down athletes. But the cops and the firemen and the military were the primary guys who were still, you know, like, you're working your job. How old are you now?
I'm 44, and I got a long way to go.
Yeah, about 44. One of my good friends started at 35. And so, I knew that, military, guys, God, they beat up their bodies so much. I worked out today with a lieutenant colonel. His name is Mark Zeno. And when he was doing he walked in, his heart rate was 72. And that's for you being a little nervous. Everybody's always like that when you're doing something new. But 72 is pretty damn good. Within probably 3 minutes, I had him up to 110. And then within another 8 minutes, I had his heart rate at 147. He walked in 74.
Yeah, that's intense.
He's not moving. He's getting in. He's going through a movement, but he's not. He's standing still, and that freaked him out. And now he's a 20-year veteran, and like his next deal is colonel and then general. And he was so floored by it. He's like, man, I got to get you over with. And he mentioned the general's name, who's like 3 miles from us. He said, we need to be doing this because the military just put together, like they've paid CrossFit, to come in. Now the military is going to be doing CrossFit. CrossFit is a great workout, but it beats your body up so much unless you're super, 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 like, strategic and tactical as you're doing it. Like, the littlest thing go either way. And these guys already beat the hell out of their bodies enough. What they need to be doing is DDPY so they can hold themselves together and deal with it, the pain and the brutality they put their bodies through.
Yeah, when you mentioned as well, and I think this is something that needs to be underlined, that you have to do it every day. And I think that's a misunderstanding, that some of these movement practices, you do them and then you're healed, then you can stop again. And I found that with the things that I do. If I do them every day, I feel incredible, but it's not miraculously healing trauma. So if you stop and you allow those imbalances to come back in, you're going to feel the pain again. You're going to lose the mobility.
I would laugh my ass off. Like somebody, I'll get a text from, it could be anybody from Aleister Black to Drew McIntyre to, any of the boys. And they'll go, D, I need something to work on for my hips. And I go, your hips bother you? Yeah. I go, you stopped doing the program, didn't you? Yeah, I haven't been doing it as much as I should. I'm like, dude, you know what you do for a living, right? Like, right now I'm starting to work not just with the NFL alumni. I'm working with the guys who are in the NFL. So, two of them, one's a linebacker named Brooks Reed, who plays for Falcons, and the other is the offensive guard, Ben Garland. Like, they both came to my house and worked out with me a couple times. They've got the app. When you're that when you're living the dream at that level, making millions of dollars to play a game, like, as much as I love those two guys, I've given them a lot of knowledge and they've taken it in, but they don't get it yet. I'm hoping that at some point they get, like, all the things that I'm showing them that will really help them, because I want to see those guys play as long as they can, and so do they. You know, when you can make $3, $4, $5 million in a year, like when you get out of the professional leagues, that money disappears.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said, you know, they happen to be multi-million dollar earning NFL players, but every single person on this planet inhabits a human body. So that's what kills me. You're talking about being in your 60s and still be able to do what you do. And I see in the first responder setting the ugly side of the ill health of a lot of, you know, especially the developed countries that we all live in, where you have the mindset when people get to 40 and have, you know, several medications that, well, I am 40. It's like, yeah, you're 40. There's people that live to be, you know, so many people live to be in their 90s and 100 these days. So 40 isn't even halfway across the line yet, and you've already given up on life. And that mindset is just mind-blowing, because why would you not invest in your own health to not only live a long time, but to have a high quality of life during those years?
I say all the time, I'm not preparing for 65. That's going to be tomorrow. I'm preparing for 75, 85, 95, and yes, 105. I've got a hyperbaric chamber that's PSI level 12, which means it's 30 feet below sea level is the pressure. I'm breathing in pure oxygen. Like, when I wake up, I'm in the middle of a construction right now, so I can't do it for about a month and a half. But for the last 6 months, I roll out of bed, I'm home, I take my phone, my iPad, I seal them, you know, so it can't have any kind of friction or any kind of spark. And you think, oh, what could happen to those? I don't know. That droid caught on fire.
Good point.
You know, you get a little spark in an oxygen tube, not a good thing. So bottom line is I have all the precautions I do, but it's a healing compression chamber. Like, there's nothing healthier than oxygen. I also have a Beamer, which is, Kevin Nash turned me on to. My hands were going so numb when I fell asleep that they'd wake me up and be so numb. And then I had to bang them to get, like, the blood flow in them. Since I've been on that Beamer every morning and every night, stopped happening. You know, again, when you take your blood from moving bloop, 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 like running through your veins, your body's going to heal faster. You're going to have more energy. You're going to be more unstoppable. You know, I've got a cryo machine, I've got a hot tub, and I've just ordered an infrared sauna. And it's like, oh my God, you've got so many things going. It's like, yeah. Because I'm going to try to show these players, this is how you hold back the hands of time. And I don't think it's going to have the real effect for another 3 years. But 3 years from now, people are going to say, dude, you're so far ahead of the curve. Again, I'm just trying to make my life super comfortable. And along the way, I'm going to tell people how to do it.
Yeah. And the people are starting to see that. I mean, the hyperbaric chamber, I think it was, I'm almost certain I had Dan Severin on the show, and I think Dan was talking about CBD, and I think hyperbaric chamber was the other thing that he did as well, that he swear by. And here he is, he's in his 60s and still wrestling to this day as well.
That's a bad son of a bitch, boy. And I mean that in the ring. Outside of it, he is a gentle teddy bear. I love Dan Severin. We were lucky enough to hook up a couple of times on the road. Got to spend some quality time with him. Just an amazing individual. Love being around him. He's a guy who thinks like I do. And he's a guy who is in his 60s and still unstoppable.
Yeah, yeah. And just so humble as well. When we spoke, I mean, he just,
oh, yeah.
Just like you said, just a complete gentle giant. But God forbid you know, corner him in an alley somewhere.
Oh, yeah, bad move.
Yes.
Bad move.
Well, you mentioned Arthur Bormann. I want to just touch on that for a second because it's what, you know, introduced me to you and who you are, but his story as well. And I'm not gonna lie. I think I sobbed a little bit watching it the first two or three times too. But I shared it again recently when we had first arranged to do this. But if you wouldn't mind just telling people that haven't seen the video, I don't know how you've missed it if you got social media, but how Arthur, you know, first came to you and then what his transformation was.
God, you know, back when Arthur and I hooked up, it's when I just developed my first DVDs. We wrote a book first to give us, you know, credibility. And then, you know, being published, it just takes it to a different level. And then our first DVD, this is 2006. And I put it out. There was no inspirational stuff. There was no eating plan, any of that, because I didn't have that yet. I didn't know how to put that together. And I knew about food, but nothing like what I would end up knowing about. But Arthur, anybody who literally invested in my program, I would send them an email. And I would thank them for, you know, getting the program and say, I'm not trying to sell you anything. You already invested. And I want to thank you for, you know, believing in me. But I also have five questions. And Arthur's answers were just unbelievable. And I said, hey, bro, thanks for, you know, taking the time to do this. It sounds like you need some help. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? And the cliff notes were morbidly obese, disabled veteran, relegated to thinking of myself as a piece of furniture. And I was like, whoa. I sent him back an email. I said, send me some pictures so I know what I'm looking at. And he sent me those pictures with a knee brace and a back brace and a wraparound canes. And I was like, man, how am I going to help that guy? The canes threw me. I didn't know what I really had at that time. And I knew it helped heal my back. My knees felt a lot better. My shoulders felt better. But those canes, what's the deal? So I knew he had to lose weight. His main goal was to lose 50 pounds because he's 5'6", 297 at the time. Excuse me. And the VA would not operate on his knees until he got under 250. So I had to lose 50 pounds. So I sent him this eating plan that a guy named Dr. Fred Bishy, who's a doctor of nutrition, and one of my brother's mentors. Guy at 78 could still run 20 miles on the beach in the thick sand, like stud. And I sent him Fred's eating plan. It's very close to what my phase 3 eating plan is about. And Arthur wrote me back four powerful words. If he would have wrote me, I think I could do it, or I'll give it a try, I would have said, awesome. Keep me posted. But like I say, he did. He wrote back four powerful words. I can do this. I sent him another email and I said, send me your phone number. That's the first person I called online that I didn't know. I do it today all the time. I did it today. But I do call people all the time that I don't know. Just because they're putting the work in and I want to help inspire them to really put the work in and take it to another level. And what I share with them, you know, especially if they're big, you know, I share with them, watch these two movies, Food Inc. and Genetic Roulette. If you can still eat the same shit you're eating after you watch these two movies, these two documentaries, then I can't help you. You know, it's like you got to be ready to help yourself. You know, you got to really be ready to own it. Well, Arthur lost, I called him. We talked. 2 weeks later, he called me back. He'd lost 20 pounds. He lost 4 inches off his stomach, and that mind-boggled him. But I knew, and I wasn't going to tell him, but I knew why that happened, mainly because he was bloated. You know, so once you take any real food and get rid of the genetically modified food and the wheat and the dairy and all that shit, well, all of a sudden, your body will stop swelling up like a blowfish. So, but he lost 20 pounds. Bottom line is he lost 32 pounds the first month. He lost 22 pounds the second month. He lost 18 pounds the third month. That's 72 pounds in 3 months. He would go on to lose 140 pounds in 10 months. Of course, more importantly, lose the knee braces, back brace, and wraparound canes to not just walk, but run. But something that's even more fascinating than that is he's never had the knee operations. That was in 2007. It's now 2019.
Amazing. And just to clarify, so Arthur was a paratrooper, wasn't he? That's what caused the injuries initially.
Yes. Yeah, but he also survived a helicopter crash.
Oh, really? I didn't know that part.
He was a beat-up veteran. Like, he wanted to get his 20 years in. He had to retire, forced to retire at 14 years in.
Wow.
So, you know, him and his wife both were military. And I literally just talked to him today because every year, every March, we open up and we put out invitations to people who had extraordinary transformations. And we call it the summit. And many of our instructors come in and many of the people who are these amazing transformations. And we're going to probably have about 200 people in my place. So my superstars who come in, you know, are people who really put it on the map, was Arthur, this woman named Stacey Morris. Did you see the recent, the last video to go viral of the guy named Vance Hines, who was a district attorney from Texas?
I didn't see that one, no.
He lost 198 pounds a year to the day from when he started my program.
Wow. Amazing.
1 year. And that's my point. What could happen in 1 year? Like, you can change your entire life in 1 year. But you got to believe. You got to, you know, the thing about Positively Unstoppable, the book, you know, the art of owning it, it teaches you, it's a workbook, teach you how to get rid of the negative talk in your brain. You know, so many of us, you know, are constantly hit with one adversity after another, you know, most of which we have no control over. But the one thing we do have control over, when we take control, it's our mindset. It's the way we think, it's the way we react, the way we adapt, and how we take action. And indirectly, the way we breathe. And breathing will literally control all of that. You know, you have oxygen on your brain, you're way clearer than you are when you're panicking. So under any circumstances, and then as a fireman, a first responder, nobody knows that more than you. You know, like, shit hits the fan, breathe, bro. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's what's you know, really interesting about your program is, you know, there are some great transformations on weight loss programs, but those weight loss alone, even though that's obviously nutrition is the way you're going to lose weight, if you're just doing that, you're not addressing, you know, your aches and pains in your body, your mobility, your fitness, your strength. But through this, and Arthur's transformation is a perfect example, is you see, you know, like you said, the canes, he's on crutches when he's doing the first part. But then you also see, it's very well done, the video, you see how much hard work he puts in. And I think that's a message that people have got to understand, is you're not going to sit there on a couch and lose 160 pounds. It takes work, and he's doing his headstands and falling, and, you know, the shelves come crashing down. But that's the reality. It's an ugly, an ugly process to go from deconditioned to conditioned, whether it's from weak to strong, from immobile to flexible, from fat to lean. And that's what I love about, you know, the videos is you got from A to B, but it was because, like you said, you changed your mindset, but you have to put the work in to get there.
And again, I can't stress that enough. That's a, you know, a credo of mine. Like, you've got to put the work in. You know, there was this amazing book that got written a few years ago, and they made a movie out of it. You know, it's called The Secret. And the thing that I loved about The Secret is that it taught people how to manifest dreams, manifest ideas. And they talked about how you could manifest dreams into reality and throwing out in the universe and all of that. And I mean, it had me. I was hooked. I was so in. I believe everything it said to this, all the things I believe. And then it got that it's one scene. I talk about this in Positively Unstoppable. They talk about this one scene where this little boy, he's probably 12, and every night I want that red bike. Oh God, I gotta have it. And he dreamed about it. And he imagined himself riding it, and he, you know, just this amazing red bike for weeks. He thought about manifesting. One day he opened the door. There was that red bike. I'm like, what? I'm throwing a flag. That's total bullshit. Now, if you tell me the kid got up in the morning. In my day, because they don't have paper delivery anymore. But back in my day, you went out and you're thinking through papers, you delivered newspapers. You got up at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock every morning, and you did your paper route first, and you did it, you saved your money, and you worked hard, you saved your money, and you got about half that money for the bike, and then your dad or your mom goes, hey, working so hard, I'm going to give you the other half of that, you know, money for that bike. You know, you earned it. Now, manifest that into a reality. But just to wish it and have it happen, bullshit. You know, that's a wrong message. The secret left out the most important thing. The secret is you got to work for it.
Yeah. And like you said, believe first that you can do it and then make it happen.
Again, back to the first line of Positively Unstoppable. What would you do if you knew your success was a certainty?
But it's true.
Well, what would you do? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's true, because that negative self-talk, it's huge. And I consider myself a pretty motivated person in general. But that little yap-yap voice is still in my head. Even if I'm at the gym about to work out, then it's like, oh, you're going to be too tired. This is going to exhaust you. You're never going to be able to pick that up, you know? So we all have those voices. But like you said, it's correcting the voices and allowing that positive internal monologue to have its turn to talk and say, no, actually, you know what? You are going to be able to do this today.
And, you know, it all comes down to the repetitions of affirmations leads to belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. I'm going to leave you with this, because I got to get in with my old lady. But I'm going to leave you with this. The repetitions of affirmations leads to belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. Do you know who's written down in brainy quotes for the guy who said that?
No.
Okay, so let's break it down. The repetitions of affirmations. Before I walked out to get my Hall of Fame ring in front of 22,000 people, with people watching on the USA Channel and on the WWE Network, the affirmation that could have been going through my brain was, or could have been, man, God, I haven't done this in years. I haven't been on TV in 12 years. Oh my God, what if I don't get a reaction? What if I forget what I'm gonna say? What if this is a disaster? Like, that could have been, you know, the thoughts running through my brain, or as I call it, you know, the inner voice, the story you tell yourself. But that wasn't my voice. My voice, and I thought about this way before I ever got there. This is going to be the best thing I've ever done. I'm going to blow people away. I'm going to make people laugh. I'm going to make them cry. I'm going to inspire them. And that's the only voice in my brain that's on autopilot. And as my with my four daughters that are about to walk out with me, the diamond daughters, the one's getting nervous because, like, what if I trip? I'm like, Ray, you're going to be fine, honey. And I'm listening to Eric Bischoff giving one of the best introductions I've ever heard, besides the one I did for Jake Steak Roberts. I'm listening to everything. I'm paying attention to everything, but that voice, it's going to be the best thing I've ever done. You're going to blow them away, bro. Man, you're owning it today. Don't make them laugh. Don't make them cry. You're going to inspire them. And then I rolled out there and I did 27 minutes and did exactly that because it was already predetermined in my brain what was going to happen. But if I didn't put the work in, it would never have happened. But I did. So the repetition of the affirmation leads to the belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. So I'm not going to tell you who said it, but I'm going to tell you what he said. Like, this guy said this affirmation over and over and over again. And somehow, there's a really good chance you're going to know who he was. Now, to really think about that before I tell you what he said, that's kind of unbelievable, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Pretty unbelievable. So here's his affirmation. I am greatest. I am the greatest of all time.
Muhammad Ali.
Think about that.
Yep, that's true. He already knew he was a champ when he was, you know, a young boxer.
But think about that. How many times did he have to say that for you to laugh hearing it and know it was him? Like, of course, Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, almost 50 like, years later.
How many times do you think he said it? Right. That's my point. How? I mean, it's not like his name is Churchill, you know, or Kennedy. Oh, wait a minute. It's Muhammad Ali. Maybe the most recognizable man in the world at one time. And it wasn't his boxing career that made him the most probably admired guy of all time, or one of them anyway. It had everything to do with what he did with his real life and how he stepped up and did shit that not many people would have done. You know, when you give up your world championship title in the prime of primes, bazillions of dollars. I mean, there was talk, like, because I was a kid, I listened to it all. You know, Muhammad Ali's afraid to go to Vietnam. Like, what? First of all, son of a bitch ain't afraid of anything. Second of all, he never would have went to Vietnam. He would have paraded around like a peacock, whether he went to the Army or Marines, Air Force, wherever he went. He would have been treated like a god.
It's very true. He would have been a poster child for the movement.
Exactly. He would have been everything. He'd have been everything that they wanted him to be. But the black man at that time, whew, going through some really tough shit, boy. I mean, some really tough shit. And it looked like that was never going to change. But when you got the greatest of all time, and then you got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and then you got Jim Brown, you know, these guys had impact, and they pissed a lot of people off. But bottom line is, they were freaking journeymen, man. They were the guys who went out and, you know, shook the trees when, you know, other people were afraid to, you know, and it was a tough, tough thing that they did, you know. And in the long run, it was the best thing for humanity, you know, all the way around, because they were right about all that shit. So, you know, that's why Muhammad Ali is, you know, one of my favorite people ever. And my wife, you know, she knows that when people ask me, so DDP, what are you doing now? So I'm changing the world, man. Like, I mean it. I'm changing people's viewpoint. And the people who want to listen, the people who don't want to listen, I don't give a shit. Don't listen. Like, I'll just speak to the people who want to hear it, and the people who want to put the work in. Like, I help people all the time I don't even know. but they're the ones putting the work in. You know, like Vance Hines, you know, Arthur Borman.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was just going to say, and what is powerful is your message is a positive one. You're trying to help people. So if you don't want to listen to that, then it's an interesting, you know, idea just to black it out. But it's not like you're standing on your soapbox and blasting political views, or you're just out there, you found something that works and you're trying to bring, you know, your program that you developed to other people and say, hey, if you try this, it's probably going to work for you too.
No, it's just I get out there and I speak to one person, one podcast. Of course, when you get on Rogan, you're speaking to millions of people. And that guy, man, poof, what an aces dude. Like, he's the voice of this generation right now. Howard Stern was for a long time. But, you know, Howard's done his thing, and he had a hell of a run, and he's still amazing. But Joe Rogan is the voice of now. He is the voice of the regular guy. He's the voice of the guy who busts his ass. He's the voice of credibility and accountability. And, you know, me and him have become buddies, you know, out of it, and then having Jake over to do his show, too. So, you know, I'm just going to do one day at a time. It's like I've been doing the whole time and preach my stuff. And if you want to get in on it, awesome. If you don't, doesn't affect me. I love what I do. I mean, I created something that it took me 10 years to be an overnight success, but I never gave up and I never quit. And I kept working, and we have a new documentary coming out this year called Relentless. And that's this story. It's about this entire 20-year journey. And again, it'll inspire people to believe, you know, to believe in themselves.